Welcome to Double Burst, a podcast about Dice Masters. We are a group of Utah players that want to bring you the latest Dice Masters news, strategies, tips, and more. Whether you're a new or seasoned player, we hope this show has something for you. I'm KT Data, one of your hosts, and welcome to episode 18. In this episode, we'll be covering some D&D draft strategies just in time for a rainbow draft weekend. Also, we'll be talking about types of players and wrapping it all up with a rat of that. So let's kick it off with D&D draft strategies.
Hey, everybody. So we are here with Alex, Zach, and Steve, the sage. So sage. How are you guys all doing? I'm kind of excited for this because we haven't kind of done a draft strategy set for Dungeons & Dragons. And the reason why we're doing this is if you guys are listening to this, you'll have a week to prepare because October 8th, 2016 is when WizKids has scheduled their Rainbow Draft weekend that you can get the Strahd promo. And I don't know about you guys, but I plan on doing at least four of them because I'm the type of person who has to have the max.
Absolutely. I want a full set of that.
I have no idea if the card's going to be really good in play or not, but I must have all four. Yeah. So that's why I brought all of you guys in, so you can help me win more of these tournaments so I can get all four of them.
Well, good thing you don't have to win to get this card. It's a participation prize, but
still.
If you want to win.
Yeah. It's a good boost. So, Alex, where do you want to kind of start out with cards that you may want to look for when you're going into a rainbow draft?
You know, so there's obviously two sets of D&D. There's Battle for Faerun and Faerun Under Siege. And I think in both sets, you got to start out with the adventurers. A lot of adventurers have great stats. It's really easy to get monsters in the field. Or your opponent most likely is going to draft monsters. You're going to play against monsters. That's how they gain experience.
That's how you keep those pesky uncommon kobold off the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and experience in this game is... It would almost be broken if it were able to gain experience outside of set. Yeah.
So do you want to explain how the experience mechanic works for newer players who may have never delved into the world of D&D?
Yeah, so experience, any character that has the keyword experience on it is considered an adventurer, first off.
Except so Minsk and Boo.
Except Minsk and Boo, but it doesn't have the experience keyword on it. The keyword says... If a monster is KO'd during your attack step and the adventurer is still active at the end of your turn, it gains an experience token. Every experience token is +1 attack, +1 defense.
Mm-hmm. And that's monster as in the black banner with the red claws going across.
Correct, right? Correct.
Yep. Because we know how Yu-Gi-Oh! Uses monsters as characters. This is not quite the same thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Same word, different definition. Yep. so some notable ones. The Gnome Ranger has destroyed me in draft. I had an opponent buy a Gnome Ranger and a Cloud Kill and I think an Elf Thief. And... I couldn't keep up.
Bad things happen.
So bad.
And there are very rare occasions where one rarity will have an experience, but not like as an Elf Thief.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pay attention. I know one that, Zach, you love using when we were doing a lot of our D&D stuff, which is the Dwarf Wizard, and not the rare, might I add.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The other ones are good. Yeah.
They're all really good. My favorite was the Dwarf Wizard that every time you use an action, it gets +2 attack, I believe it was. And I just had a bunch of... You know, Cloud Kill, and I think I had a Prismatic Spray and a few actions, buff them up and try to swing through.
Yeah, I swear that team always had my number when I played you.
It was fun.
I can't beat this.
Yeah, those Dwarf Wizards don't just look for the rare. Look for all of them.
Yeah, I agree. Also, another thing to look at with adventurers is the good versus evil sign.
Yeah, if you're... I don't think it's super important unless you are building around it. There are cards like the Unicorn that, you know, when you field good things, it does X. Or there are a couple cards that will buff your evil characters. So if you are planning on doing something based around it, it's definitely something to look at. But I think overall, it's not the most important thing.
Oh, no. But they're like the Drist.
It is definitely there, and it's definitely something that you need to pay attention to.
Can you guys give me a quick overview? Because I never look at the good versus evil affiliation. So the good is the white with the little halo thing, right?
Yeah, the good is the white with the halo.
The neutral is the leaf.
And
it has
and
a
then
leaf.
Evil is a little like skull and a red and background.
It's a demon-looking thing.
Yeah.
So if you've never seen these sets before, I highly suggest you at least familiarize with these affiliations, because you don't see any of them outside the Dungeons & Dragons sets.
Well, good and evil aren't really affiliations, yep, per se.
Or they're alignments.
Yeah, they're alignments. They're not considered affiliations. So if you do play out a set, that doesn't come into...
Yeah. And that's what makes drafting this is so fun, is that there's a lot of things in set.
Yeah, these sets are great.
Like, you really can't play adventurers outside of the set.
Yeah, it's hard. Tough. It's hard to play. I think the one thing that you should try, if you're trying for an adventurer team, the one thing you need to try to do, if you're doing Farron Under Siege or a mix, is try to get a giant spider with the force block global.
That's the uncommon giant spider.
The uncommon giant spider with the force claw global pairs with adventurers, because you can say, I'm going to force that monster to block, and then you can KO it, and you're going to gain experience that way.
I just realized that's the only card that I know of that has a global on its uncommon, and then the rare and the common don't have the global.
Yeah.
Kind of opposite of normal. Yeah.
That is. The other thing with the adventurers is most of them can be equipped, and you need to watch that with the, like,
yeah,
the
magic that has
helmet.
The little tool hammer thing, mm-hmm, icon that's on there. Because I know people, a lot of people ask, hey, can I play this magic helmet on a superhero character? And you can't, because it has to have that icon.
Yeah, it's gear, and there's a gear keyword that says, mm-hmm, it must have the equipable icon.
Yeah, so speaking of gear, what's the most, like, useful pieces of gear that you can draft?
I think the magic helmet or the magic sword from Battle for Faerun are great. They have a lot of different options to them.
Because the magic helmet, it attaches and then makes your character unable to target, I believe.
The common character must be blocked by two or more characters. That's always a good thing, because then they have to have double the amount of things.
Yeah,
to
especially
block
in draft, because you're not optimal is not a word that's
used.
If, exactly. if you can pump up those adventurers and then throw that on there to make them harder to block or take out a couple guys, that's ideal.
Yeah, for sure. The uncommon one, equipped character cannot be affected by your opponent's action dice or character abilities.
I like that.
That's also a good one. That one actually gets some play in Unlimited.
Protect that dwarf wizard.
Yeah. The magic sword, they're all okay, but the rare, if you can get the rare, characters damaged by this equipped character are knocked out at the end of the attack step. Automatic death touch to anything that's on it.
Yeah.
It is a four cost.
Or it's going to be the keyword deadly.
Yeah.
Exactly. From a set that no one cares about that's coming out next, right?
No one in this room.
Okay, so the next one, this is my favorite kind of team to put together in the D&D sets, and those are the fiends.
And I'm actually going to say avoid drafting the dragons and the fiends as part of a strategy, unless you have a consistent way to pick them up in the draft.
There's one dragon you want.
Oh, yes.
That's red dragon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it has a global, number one, and if you can field it,
yeah,
you've got a good chance.
That's a good win.
Yeah, the problem with the dragons that are in this set are the ones that you get out of the booster packs are the more expensive ones, where the ones that are, you want the ones that are in the starter, and you can't get that in a draft.
But it's not a bad strategy to get dragons per se. Just don't try to build a team around it, because the breath weapons are just deadly.
It's very easy to get a whole team of seven cost characters, because there's enough of them.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
I'd like to go back to the fiend teams. I disagree with Steve. I think the fiend teams, if you pull open your first pod and you're like, oh, there's some good fiends in here, if you can get at least half of your team being fiends, and you can get the hellhound that
discounts
the cost.
Yeah,
it becomes a much more playable, because you're having the gate abilities, which allow you to
when you field a character, you can roll an unpurchased die of that character, or depending on whatever the card says, you can roll it. If it rolls the character face, you put it into your prep area and you're ready to do it again. I have, like, that Erinnes, the five cost Erinnes, she's my jam, man. Every time I play with her, I seem to always roll like three Erinnes, because nobody grabs her.
Wait, what? You are rolling characters?
Yeah, crazy, right? Like, that's that's like the only...
If you're feeling lucky, take it. If you can't roll characters, stay away.
Yeah, I'm not against drafting fiends. I'm just saying, if you don't have a consistent way to get them.
Yeah. This is where I tell you, it is really, really important to look at the rainbow at that point. Uh-huh. just because of the gate ability, you need to make sure you can get at least 2-3 is probably what you want to aim for of that character. If you can't get 3, if you only can get 2, it's not going to be that effective, and you may want to pick a different win condition.
And if there's only 3 of them out there, you're probably not going to get all 3 of them, just so you know.
Yeah, when you're going for the fiends, you have to be able to get more than one, so you definitely have to pay attention to the rainbow. I think fiends, so one thing I want to say about this topic in general is my favorite way to draft D&D is to draft half from one set and half from the other. Then you have the pit fiend, which discounts other fiends, but there's no other fiends in Battle for Faerûn. Yes, so it works really well when you have Battle for Faerûn and Faerûn Under Siege. I think Faerûn Under Siege strategy, another thing that works really great is Fabricate.
No one likes to use that. That's such a bunk mechanic.
I saw that when we first drafted. I did a release day draft, and I played with a couple people that were not super familiar with Dice Masters, but a couple people that were, and I saw Fabricate, and I was like, man, I'm just going to take all of those.
Yeah.
So, I ended up with...
So you're the reason why. I swear, every D&D draft I go to, I maybe will get one golem, and that's it. All the other... I've never been past the golem.
I think golems are probably the only thing that I've ever drafted more than 4 of, because I didn't want anyone else to have it.
So what's the most effective way to use Fabricate inset?
I think it's honestly, for drafting, the best thing about it is getting a character out with good stats and a good ability for less. So, you know, you buy 2 elf thieves and then you fabricate it and get out a clay golem, or, you know, you can get out the iron golem if you really want to. And he's a beefy character that you can get out without having to actually pay energy for it. And so if you're sticking just D&D basic actions, there's not a lot of ramp in this set, in these sets. And so I think Fabricate, you know, it gives you ramp because it puts dice in your prep area. It buys a character for no energy, and a good character at that. So
the one strategy I've seen a lot of you guys use, because you guys draft that too, so I don't get any of these, is the common elf thief, because it's essentially a Winfield ability, so you want a way to get those elf thieves off the field. Fabricate is a pretty efficient way to do it, right?
Yeah, it's a good way to get him off and keep cycling him through. And, you know, if we're going to talk about basic actions that we're going to use in this set, Cloud Kill is a really popular one if you're playing inset basic actions, and Elf Thief destroys Cloud Kill as well.
Yep. Okay, so on to the next on the list. And this one, Zach, you and I think everybody hates us because we always draft all of these, and that would be Beholder.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love both Beholders. On my league team, I used the uncommon, where it allows you to move 2 action dice over to your prep area. And that was great when you had the dwarf wizard. It comboed really well. So I had all of those to be able to roll the next turn. And then also, if it was Cloud Kill, Prismatic Spray, it would really help get that dwarf wizard pumped up. But the common is actually my favorite. I mean, you take away the abilities on these beholders, and they're still really good. Just based on the algorithm, I guess, of purchase cost to stats, it's excellent. Low fielding costs, high attacks for only a 4 cost, and you throw in an ability where it gives you 2 globals for free. It's great in Unlimited. In draft, I'd say probably the common and uncommon are pretty equal, if not uncommon, maybe a little bit better in my opinion. But if you get the right globals out there, maybe like a red dragon or magic missile, polymorph, some things like that to get for free, it's just icing on the cake with that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his fielding cost is 0-0-1, and his stats are 4-5-6 on attack.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
For a four cost.
So other good cards in Faerûn Under Siege, the Cockatrice, KO a 4 cost character,
great
or
way,
less
especially in drafts, because nobody wants to get like a 5 cost or higher, because you may not be able to buy it. So they have all these low cost characters.
Exactly. The only downside to the Cockatrice is it's a must do action. So if your opponent doesn't have anything that's 4 cost or less, or doesn't have anything, you have to KO something in your field that's 4
just
cost.
Just KO the Cockatrice for next turn.
Just KO the Cockatrice.
So does that trigger an adventurer? Do you get a counter if you use that?
You only get counters on your turn.
And your opponent's
and your opponent's monster.
And your opponent's monster dies.
I know that was a question before. So
the cockatrice, if you fielded the cockatrice and had an adventurer out and chose to KO a monster, it would give you an experience if your adventurer stayed in the field till the end of the turn.
So that could be
yeah,
good.
So what are some other characters that kind of remove stuff from the field? So, I mean, like the giant spider, of course, we talked about the global uncommon giant spider.
Well, and actually the uncommon giant spider is really useful because you can, it forces your opponent to use all his sidekicks.
Yeah, in drafts, you're always getting these walls up. Well, mm-hmm. not always, but sometimes you'll get a wall up and sometimes there are a lot of sidekicks. And if you can avoid all of those as blockers, you can get the ones out or the ones through that you want to get through.
Like the Beholder.
Yep.
Like the Beholder.
So,
yeah.
And so Cloud Kill is a really good strategy, but you always have to make sure your opponent doesn't have energy or it's not going to be that effective. The two cards, Alex, that kind of remove energy from your reserve pool are kind of the Elf Thief and the Intellect Devourer, right?
Yeah, the Intellect Devourer will, it depends on which version you have, but it typically has to deal with the question mark energy that's in your opponent's reserve pool. So, so the common one's really good. Move target die showing energy from opponent's reserve pool to the use pile. If they've saved a double energy for something, you can move that because it's showing energy. It doesn't say how many energy. The uncommon is remove all question mark energy from the opponent's reserve pool to the use pile. Again, this helps when Cloud Kill comes in. This helps their global ability use. So
yeah, I had to go that route because all of you guys kept drafting all the Elf Thieves.
And last but not least, we can't forget the ring with the global on it, the energy fixer.
I believe it's, again, the same ratio. It's the common and the super rare.
Common and super rare.
So you may read it and say the text is different, but they have ruled it that the global is the same for both of them.
Yes.
That was actually my question that I asked.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people were very angry with me when that first came out. I'm sorry.
So I'm going to read the super rare one because the reading on the super rare one is the most clear. It's a different worded global on the common, but it plays the exact same. To pay one energy, once during your turn, you may put an NPC die, which NPC in D&D means sidekick. So you may put an NPC die from your use pile into your reserve pool on any face. You can use this for a sidekick if you need an extra blocker. You can use this to fix energy. You know, if you rolled a shield but you want a mask, you pay that mask and it turns into a shield. It's always a good thing to draft the double-edged sword because your opponent gets to use it, but I think the benefits outweigh the negatives.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, now, what's your guys' opinion on Swarm? Yeah, for a draft.
I don't go for it because I know all you guys go for it. So
it can be good, but you have to have enough to make it worth it.
Again,
hard to do.
Look at the rainbow. I don't think.
I think
looking at the rainbow is definitely important. In Faerun Under Siege, the goblin with swarm has done me well. It's a more expensive one. It's 3 cost.
It's kind of expensive for what you're getting, but
yeah, mm-hmm. but its stats are okay, so it's going to stay in the
field. I think
they
got lucky with a lizard folk one when the rainbow had like 8 of them or something like that. So
yeah,
we got lucky with that. But I think it's dependent on the rainbow. If there's only 2 of them, I wouldn't recommend
the other problem with the kobolds, which are so great because they're the 1 cost and you know they're great. They have to attack if there's
not to mention
they have to block. Which
I believe they have to attack on the turn.
I'm getting
if
it. I'm getting here. The uncommon one, which is the one with swarm, must attack if your opponent controls any adventurers.
Yeah.
At least one adventurer must block this kobold.
Yeah.
So a lot of adventurers going to be played, so that's risky.
And to be honest, in practicality, you don't see a lot of kobold dice in many of the drafts.
No.
Either way. And that's not just from people drafting. It's just from opening packs.
Our last draft that we had with D&D, I ended up with 3 kobolds, which I thought was great. I could never play them because everyone had lots of adventurers, and I didn't want them just to get knocked out and not be able to have the swarm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about some highlights from the Battle for Faerun. One of my favorite ones was the Frost Giant common. He requires 2 blockers. Again, anytime that that you can manipulate blockers in any way, shape, or form is always a good thing.
Yeah. I like the Human Paladin.
Always. It's a good protection because
it's just a great protection.
He says that one, what his ability says, your opponent or your characters cannot be targeted with globals, or is it abilities?
I think it's
while active, your characters in the field cannot be affected by global abilities used by your opponent. But it also has a global, pay a shield, reduce the damage you take mm-hmm. from a character's ability to one.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that way your characters can't get taunted out with that uncommon giant spider because they can't target.
Magic missile, which a lot of people will be playing. If you get the Human Paladin, get him out, bring Magic Missile.
Yeah, your sidekicks are safe.
You ping theirs and they can't ping yours.
Yeah, if you do want to do dragons, any of the half elf or half dragon.
I love the uncommon. I think most people here like the rare, but I like the uncommon where it deals the opponent one damage when you feel the character.
Yes, that's it. When you feel the dragon, deal one damage. The common is the dragons get +1/+1. The rare reduces action die cost to a zero if it's a three or less. The half dragon is a... If you want to do dragons, you should try to pick up a half dragon.
I would suggest that early on in the draft, if you really are going to do that, pick that up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the dragons will get all picked through, and then you'll be left with a half dragon that doesn't really help you that much.
I would say as soon as you take your first dragon, try to take that half dragon.
Yeah.
The halfling thief that you get in the draft, it's also a starter character, but the one that you get in the draft, when it's assigned to attack, you may move up to two of your opponent's dice from his used area to his bag. Put sidekicks in the bag mm-hmm. all the time. Put sidekicks in the bag. Clogs up their bag. May not allow them to recycle their bag this turn. It's a three cost. Not great stats. It's the exact same die as the half elf thief.
Yeah, but yeah, both of the thieves are really good. And this is one of my favorite ones, even though I swear it's not as effective as the invisible stalker.
I love that one. The uncommon.
Yeah. Not only does the die look cool, the abilities on the cards are pretty cool too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the common or uncommon. The uncommon probably gets the nod just because it's a four cost instead of a five cost. But while active, you may move a character to the use pile to prevent all damage from a character that damages you either with an ability or during the attack step. It's an easy way to move your guy out to negate. You know, you can let a big guy swing through and then you just mm-hmm. sacrifice him.
Yep. Okay, and then the next character that's in Battle of Faerun is a essential. If you see this and there's not a super rare in that pod, you probably should grab it, and that is the purple worm.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Which ones? Yep.
So
all of them
because they all have overcrush. The uncommon is probably the beastliest of all of them because mm-hmm. that is when he attacks, you KO one of your opponent's characters and whatever level that character was deals damage to that opponent, and then his beefy body is attacking.
And then it has overcrush. Yeah, and he's 1/1/2 fielding with 5/6/8 attack line.
It's so just ridiculous.
It is. Yeah,
great, great character. Six cost at the common, just has overcrush. It's a good one. The last one I would say that we need to talk about in Battle for Faerun is Prismatic Spray.
Yep.
Even if you don't play it, hate draft them.
Yeah. Because it's such a cure-all for everything. Oh, I'm having a problem with this character. Okay, I'll play my Prismatic Spray. Done.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So last but not least, what basic actions do you guys think are good in set? Because a lot of times these Rainbow Draft weekends, we do in set only basic actions. So what are some of your favorite basic actions from the draft for D&D?
Well, I actually like, this is kind of an outsider one. I actually kind of like the Mordenkainen sword.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're rushing, use that. Use that a lot.
The dirty
I've
trick.
Seen that with uh-huh. Sturge.
Yeah. Who would do that? The dirty trick is turn one, buy Mordenkainen's sword. Turn two, turn two, turn three, get it out. Your opponent has all of their sidekicks in the mm-hmm.
And if you use your ring global when you can.
Yep. All you need is one sidekick. What Mordenkainen's sword does is gives +1/+1 to any character equal to the number of sidekicks in your opponent's used pile. So that turn three, that's 8 if you go first.
Yeah. You're going to see Magic Missile. You're going to see Polymorph. You're going to see Resurrection.
So Resurrection is my key. If you have 5-cost characters, make sure you bring that Resurrection, because it's almost guaranteed that turn 2 you'll be able to buy your 5-cost character.
Yeah, the one that I like that most people don't for a little bit of ramp is Charm. You draw 3 more dice and you get to roll any NPCs. It can kind of bite you in the butt towards the end of your game, because you may be moving characters into your use pile, because anything that's not a sidekick you put in your use pile. But early game, it's pretty good. I think I like it. I've never really had an issue using it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we're going to see Cloud Kill.
Yeah, Cloud Kill is... if you don't know how to play against it, practice against it before you go into the draft, because it can wreck you if you're not prepared.
The other thing I would say is most people are going to bring Cloud Kill, so don't worry about bringing it yourself.
Yeah, and one that I really would recommend if you notice that, you know... you kind of know your community and you know what they'll play, bring the Blink Transmutation. Mm-hmm.
So you
the global.
You're mostly using it for global, but its ability is good. So the global is you pay a mask, you can move a character from the attack zone back into the field zone. Its ability is when you play it after blockers are declared, and it deals whoever's blocking 1 damage for each character they used to block.
Each die.
So... Go ahead.
Another underrated one is Blessing. If you're a type of player that likes to maybe play a little more aggro or get lots of characters out in the field, get a little bit of a wall and you want to attack, you can use the Blessing action to be able to pump those up a little bit. They'll survive sidekicks blocking, and a few of those go through, you can buff them up.
Yeah, I think if you have an Overcrush team, so if you do get like the Purple Worm,
Kona Cold
is required.
Yeah. You use the global.
But the action itself is underrated.
Yeah, it is good field clear.
Yeah, it's good field clear. Does 1 damage to 1, 2 damage to the second, and 3 damage to the third. And it only works, though, if they have 3 characters in their field.
Yep.
So I actually like buying that action, but the global is what you bring if you bring Overcrush.
Yep, and I'm not sure the KO King would ever forgive us if we don't mention Shocking Grasp. That is a great ramp tool. What you do is you field your sidekick, use your Shocking Grasp on it, and then you have 2 extra
damage. Because what does Shocking Grasp say, Kevin?
You deal 1 damage to a character. If it's KO'd, Shocking Grasp goes to your prep area.
Yeah, definitely. So not only can you ramp with that die and the sidekick that you just knocked out, but if there's a pesky little guy on the other side, you can also knock that one out too.
Mm-hmm. Now, a double-edged sword action for me is Polymorph.
Agreed.
Yes, I'm not a big fan of Brain. I'm so sorry.
The global is so good to spin up your characters. You almost look at it for that, but you got to realize.
Yeah, the action itself allows you to swap a character from the use pile with a character that's on the field. And unfortunately, I swear every time I play Steve and he brings Polymorph, I end up using it against him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it works on the other side of the board too. So, you're going to block with that character? No, you're not.
Yeah. All right, guys. I love this discussion. D&D, I think it's one of the fun drafts to do. Like our league, that was... awesome time playing around with it. Thank you guys so much, and we'll get you guys back in a second so we can talk about some errating. All right, guys, we are back. I am here with Kenneth, Zach, who we haven't heard since I think it was episode 1.
Yeah.
It's been a while. And, of course, the KO King. What we wanted to cover today is kind of a topic that we're borrowing from Magic. It's the different types of players and Dice Masters and kind of the different abilities. So, Kenneth, do you want to kind of explain the basic overview of all this?
Yeah, so in Magic, they have what they call a psychographic profile, and they have determined that there's 3 kind of core players of the game. They've given them nicknames Timmy, Johnny, and Spike, and they, based on the way that they... each kind of view the game and what they look for in the game. Timmy is he's looking for a big win, big characters, big flashy things tend to be more expensive. Over in Dice Masters, you're looking at your big giant overcrushers, your characters that have a big when fielded effect, maybe. You know, they tend to be more expensive generally. Johnny is another one, and he's looking for kind of like combos and style. Not necessarily just looking for a big win or a big creature, but if he can have multiple triggers happen off of something, that's kind of a Johnny play style. And then Spike is the guy who's looking to win at all costs.
Okay, so now that we kind of know the different types, this probably is going to explain why we have everybody on here. So how about we just start classifying people or everybody that we actually have on this segment for the different types, and we kind of can go into each of them.
Right. Well, I think that I'm kind of a Timmy. Definitely I've got some Spike in me too, but I tend to be more Timmy than the other two guys sitting here.
I'm definitely Spike all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that silence was not edited in, guys. That was real.
I think this is Zach. I think I'm most Spike. I think I've been nominated as the most Spike.
Yeah, and that leaves our KO King is definitely the Johnny of the group.
All right, so where do you want to kick off first? Kind of going to...
I think one thing we need to make sure we clarify as well, like what Kenneth was saying, is that there's combos too. I mean, even though I'm a Spike and I want to win at all costs, there are certain Spikes that will do anything, like what you said, to win. I'm a Spike Johnny where I like to win at almost any cost. I really like to be original. I like to find my own niche on how to win, but I really, really want to win. Whereas in a lot of Spikes will do anything. If they want to go in and net deck, find that best bard team, find that best team that can win 9 times out of 10, they'll use that.
Right. Yeah, and Johnny's definitely more the brewer of the three.
Yeah, I think Spike is that guy that's just going to bring the bard team every week. We're not talking about the competitive WKOs or
he's just there to win
events.
No matter what.
Yeah. No matter the game, he wants to win.
If he plays 10 games and loses one, he's mad because he still thinks he could win that one and should have won it.
Yeah, stays focused on the one that he lost.
Yeah, I think this game, at least with the people that we play with, is kind of geared for a lot of Johnnies, those people that love combos. They'll look through the set and be like, this works really well with this. And they want to do everything that they can to make that combo happen, and that's very satisfying. Mm-hmm. Satisfying.
Okay, so here's an interesting thought experiment. All three of you are, you know, very proficient team brewers. So I want to ask you, what is your first thing you do when you start brewing a team? And that way we can kind of compare and contrast how you guys approach making a team.
So I've been thinking about this lately because we've done segments where we talk about building a team and win condition. And more I've noticed that I actually brew teams based on control first. So sometimes I struggle with that win condition. And a lot of it's based on, I just want to manipulate my opponent's dice.
That's because you're a Johnny and you're looking to make sweet combos things in the game.
To kind of compare it, Zach, how do you like approach, what is the first thing that comes to your mind when you're brewing a team?
Usually I start getting ideas when a new set comes out. For example, the Green Arrow Flash. I'm looking through them and I find that card that speaks to me. For me, example, in this one, it was the rare Gorilla Grodd. I see that card and I say, all right, what do I need to support that character to make me win? What do I need to do to win? It's not necessarily about a combo and saying, oh, that'd be cool if I did this and this. It's like, no, what do I need to do to have that card and its supporting cast win?
Which is the gorilla, the rare?
The unblockable, unless it's by crossover characters.
Mm-hmm. So, Kenneth, how do you approach making your teams?
I tend to find, similar to Zach, find a card that I want to use. But with me, it's generally what is my win con? Not necessarily just one specific card that I want to use, but the way that I want to use it also. Probably at my most embracing my Timmy side would be when I've used the rare Doc Ock from AVX with Overcrush and Force Blocking, where he does his full attack damage to each blocker.
Steve has good memories of that.
Yeah. So with that, you know, use something that makes my opponent's small characters block him, and the more people that block him, the bigger it gets and the more damage it does. I believe when me and Steve played, I went, well, I'm going to force these guys to block it, and you will end up taking 24 damage. And he went, well, what if I add these blockers? And I was like, that's fine. Now you take 30. Like it just gets exponentially bigger. It's a monstrosity of a card.
Yeah, so you guys can start to see the different types and the different ways that all of you guys are kind of approaching, even team building, even playing the game. And I think that plays to it too, because so Zach, when you're on your field, you're thinking of your buy order. What are you thinking when you're playing?
Well, if I'm a spike and I'm trying to think of what I need to do to win, I've played this team 100 times. I know exactly what my buy order is. If I'm playing the Bard team, you know what you're doing turn one no matter what. No matter what you roll, you know what you're going to buy, because you need to have it so calculated that you need to be able to know exactly what to do at every second in order to win. And if you don't prepare for that, you won't win.
Yep.
So I think a lot of the spikes are super competitive because they want to win, and they sometimes will do the most preparation.
Yeah, the spike is the guy who's going to have put in a bunch of practice against all the other meta teams, and they're going to know what to do when Constantine is bought turn two. They're going to know what to do when their opponent buys Bard turn three. They're going to know what adjustments they need to make to their game plan based on the other winning meta teams.
They need to know literally every card in the game and pretty much know how to play against most of them.
Yeah, to be fair, I'm a little bit of a spike when it comes to competitive. You know, Kenneth and I have practiced for hours trying to figure out everything. When I look at these three characteristics, I'm looking more at like the casual play. And the more I've been thinking about it, it's what keeps a community healthy. If we have just a spikes,
I don't think anybody'd still be around.
Right. Even if you have one spike hard in the area that's just bringing a Bard team, it starts to dissipate. It's hard for those new players to get excited. You know, I think even new players, at least around here, if they come out with a Bard team and give it a try, it's just not entertaining. Is that the right thing to say? Like, it's just not fun. You win, but what's fun about it?
You need to know the type of players are that you play against. I know that if I'm playing against Steve, that he's not here to just win. He wants to have fun. And if it's a casual game, not that I'll change the way I play, but in order to have a fun time for me and him, it's important to let him maybe. I want to help and see that combo as well. If I'm playing against Russ, I know that, you know, you're the KO king. You're the type that wants to get that combo off. It says that about your favorite cards. If the Rare Crow, you know, that is a very Johnny card. Whereas if we're talking about the Bard, that is a very Spike card. Or
Doc Ock with Overcrush is very, very Timmy. The
Phoenix Force, anything basically
Phoenix
seven
Force is
and
a pretty
up
Timmy card.
I think Timmy is a lot of new players or younger players. Like my son, Mike, is a very Timmy player because he sees Unblockable or Overcrush. And, you know, when you're a new player and you see an Unblockable character, you figure that it's impossible for your opponent to stop that. You know, I think I used to play against it at first Thanos because I came out with Age of Ultron. Is I thought that he was the most amazing card, even though he was 8 cost because he was unblockable.
You're not thinking of the fielding costs. You're not thinking of the ramp that you need to actually get that. You see this awesome, powerful card and say, I need to play this at all costs. It will win games.
I also feel like I have. It was in embracing my Timmy side when I was playing against Alex with a Taskmaster team, and I just refused to attack him until Taskmaster had all of the keywords. He had to have all of them.
That's why Taskmaster is so awesome.
Yeah, I've been.
Yeah, he is. It's way fun, but I just would not attack until I had fielded everything else.
Yeah, Kevin knows how that works. We were literally in a game months ago where I was so worried about my combo. I had damaged. I could have swung through and attacked.
You had numbers.
And I didn't even pay attention to it for like three turns because I was so worried about what I wanted to do.
Hitting that combo.
Mm-hmm. So we've kind of talked about a little bit of the different types and a little bit about how you can use that to your advantage. But how do you kind of actually prepare to play with these different type of players? Because you're not going to know really what that type of player and what their kind of archetype is unless you know them really well. How do you kind of mentally prepare for that before you go into a tournament or something like that?
I think to be the best player, you have to have some of everything. So in brewing my competitive teams, there is a little bit of everything, and some of that, like my spiker Timmy, might just be blue eyes. Like I'm just gonna swing in for 10 with my blue eyes, you know. So I think you have to have a little bit of everything and know what your opponent's gonna do. So around here we all play each other quite a bit, so we get to know each other and play styles. But for me, my favorite is playing someone new in best 2 out of 3 and just learning their team. So game one, trying to figure out what they do. And then, you know, if I win, I win. If not, I've figured out what they're going to do. And I'm going to try to play around it.
As a spike player, I think I've had to kind of condition myself and learn that not everything is competitive. You know, we play a lot of casual play, and it should be casual. So I have to kind of set myself up a lot of times to be like, all right, Zach, it's okay to lose. Yeah. You can lose, and it can still be fun. And I have to remember that some people are out there just to have fun. It's fun to just play the game, and you can still have fun even if you don't win.
Yeah, I think that there's kind of less value in knowing what type your opponent is than it is to knowing yourself. As far as knowing your opponent, you know, if you look at a game and you're like, it seems like it's going fine. What's the problem? Why is my opponent getting so salty? Well, maybe he's a Johnny and his combo is not working. Like seeing.
It's not what you're doing. It's not happening on his side.
He's not having his plan go the way that he wanted it to. Timmy is swarming you with small characters, but the big guy that he built around isn't on the field yet, and he's getting frustrated. Spike has won every game up to this point all day, but he's losing against you. Of course, he's going to be mad. You know, that's where I think that it's the most important to know what your opponent is, and it's in the same way. It's also that to know what you are, so you can kind of focus on not taking that frustration out on your opponent when you're in those positions.
It helps in the conversation as well. If you know your opponent is a Johnny and they're not getting that combo, you know, talk about it and explain, you know, hey, that's a cool combo. Don't let this get down on you. You can do that. Or maybe you can say, hey, how about this card? Have you thought of that? And have a good conversation and make it fun. Because a lot of people just play for conversation as well.
I feel that's actually one of the strengths of this game is that you can have a conversation with the person on the other side and you can feel like you can get to know each other better. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I first started playing this game, I didn't think I'd be hanging out with you guys as much at all. But as we started playing more often and just getting to know each other, I think that is a very important thing. And something that if you're in a community full of spikes, I don't think you get the full advantage of that because both of you are just trying to let's go for the win.
Yeah.
And if
50% of the people are going to be upset because they're going to lose, then you're going to have 50% of the crowd that is just mad. Mm-hmm. And when you get into doing multiple rounds, cut to top 8, you're going to have a lot of people that are upset, and that can lead to a toxic community.
Yeah, and that's you've heard it here, you've heard it everywhere, where people have said Dice Masters, the community is amazing, and that's just one of those things, is to kind of know your types. Guys, I thank you so much for coming to talk to us, because I know everybody has super busy schedules and everything, so it is awesome. For you guys at home, do some deep thinking. Find out what kind of player you are. Are you a Timmy, Johnny, or a Spike, or a combination of them? Like, I know I dip into a little bit of everything.
Yeah, we all kind of dip into a little bit of everything. And for the sake of this conversation, we were kind of embracing the three different pieces of each. And these are based off of things that they've found throughout the years of, Wizards of the Coast having Magic the Gathering and developing and all that stuff. maybe for Dice Masters, we have different types.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's other things that we hadn't even thought of. If you see the game in a different way, maybe we need our own different names. Maybe Timmy, Johnny, and Spike need to be...
Well, no, and Russ will want somebody to name something after him, so are you okay, KO King?
That's not true.
All right, so we'd love to hear from you guys. You can always shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. All right, gentlemen, we will see you a little bit later on to have a nice roundtable for an errata that. Okay, guys, we are back. Steve the Sage, the KO King, Alex, Kenneth, and Zach is in the room. Also, quick shout out to Ashley. I know she hates it when we mention her, but she's in the room too. So it's time for another errata that. This time we decided to pick Hawkeye, what kind of arrow from the Age of Ultron set. He's a three-mask Avenger. His ability is when fielded, your opponent chooses one of their characters. Hawkeye deals 3 damage to that character, and if they aren't KO'd, you take 2 damage. So who wants to start with us? Steve, you suggested this.
Yeah,
so.
I just noticed that when we were doing the rat of that we were always doing super rares. I thought, let's try to do a common. What can I say?
You have like almost zero control other than am I going to field him or am I just not going to do anything with him, right?
Exactly.
You have to have every character in your field has to be less than 3 defense, right?
No, your opponent has
in your opponent's
field, which you have almost like zero control over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also important to know that this is the only one that you're going to open in packs from Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Not that the others are really good.
Yeah.
No, they're also bad, but they're all stuck in the starter and they're not going to clog up your draft.
Uh-huh. Because he's tempting a 3 cost, right? And what are his attack stats?
He's got a three. A 3-1, a 3-2, and a 3-4 with a 0-0-1 fielding cost. Yeah. So as a blank die, he'd be great.
and that's probably the best errata that we could give it, but we'll look into some other options.
All right, so who has a suggestion on how to fix this Hawkeye?
Well,
or how to errata this Hawkeye?
Mine is take off the last clause, which is, and if it isn't KO'd, you take 2 damage.
Hmm.
I would like the choice of what to deal with the 3 damage to.
Yeah.
Seems pretty simple. Let me choose. I'm shooting the arrows, gosh dang it.
I just want to change it completely. Well active, if Hawkeye doesn't attack, he does 3 damage to 1 target character.
So kind of like the Sagi from Yu-Gi-Oh!
So he'd be an archer. He'd be behind the lines. He's not going up to get beat in the face. He's going to shoot his arrow over everybody else and hit somebody.
Yeah, and you know, because that makes a little more sense. Personally, yeah, I'm with the KO King where you take out opponent chooses. If you could pick, I really think that would be so much better because you're taking the damage. So shouldn't you be able to kind of have a little control?
Yeah.
I also would like it to say, like, their character dice. It doesn't have to say that. I'd like to say character dice. I always
I know why, because I was like, he's going to either add when KO'd or...
No, but anytime I can damage my own characters, like, it opens up more doors. So if I could field and choose a character to deal 3, you know, so, like, I could field him, hit my rare crow, take it, you know, keep things going.
Hey, if you want to make this a really actually good card... with just changing one word in that last line, and if it isn't KO'd, they take 2 damage.
Hmm.
Just one word.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then they have to either KO a character or hurt themselves.
Yeah, because he's shooting arrows. He's not going to shoot himself in the foot.
Yeah.
So he's either shooting a character or shooting your opponent.
Well, and it's Hawkeye. He's the most accurate archer in the face of the planet. Like,
yeah, similar to that, I wouldn't mind it being... your opponent can choose that it does 3 damage, but maybe you can pay the 2 life to KO that character. So if they have one giant beastly character in the field and you don't want it there and they choose that one because it can absorb 3 damage, you can then pay 2 life to get it out of the field.
Yeah, that would be a nice idea.
Okay, so now that we've had the practical answers, how many of you guys here are Hawkeye fans? I've heard really good things about the recent comic run that's been going with Hawkeye, but I don't know a lot about the character outside of the movies. But what are some effects that you would like to see that are may just be way out of left field?
Well, one of the things is Hawkeye in the comics, not so much in the movies, is he's really cocky. And so I'd kind of like to see something, you know, a little cocky.
Yeah, I think going with the theme of the subtitle, what kind of arrow? Why not give him three different abilities? You know, like this does X amount of damage to this, or
when fielded at level one, it does one thing. When fielded at level two, it does a different thing. When fielded at level three, it does something else. That would be really cool.
Because that would be thematic with what kind of arrow, because we all know Hawkeye has the little thing that changes the arrowheads. You know, it could be an exploding arrow or a freezing arrow or just a normal arrow. And so I think that could be fun.
Or like in the same set with Red Skull, where your opponent chooses one of the two, either, takes damage or gains life or something like that. That'd be cool. It's like, all right, what kind of arrow do you want this to happen or this to happen? It's your opponent's choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about when fielded, your opponent gains two life?
I think they already have that one.
Yeah.
They already had that one,
oh.
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, that's another great candidate for that.
Just another Hawkeye.
Isn't that another Hawkeye?
Yes, it is from the same set.
Yeah, I think when... Like it's this fielding cost that is so deceiving, right? At 0/0/1 for those stats, you're like, I could deal with this.
Yeah, it's a decent vanilla die. Unfortunately, it's not vanilla.
What
I really don't get as far as like flavor, like totally whiffed it on the flavors. What kind of arrow? Why doesn't he know? Why does the opponent know better than he does? He has no idea what he's firing off. Oh, that exploded. I guess I will react by being exploded. You know,
that's why the question mark's there.
If I had Iron Fist in the field and Hulk, I could field him.
Which Hulk are you talking about?
GG. Iron Fist is only opponents.
Oh, that's right.
GG.
But if I have Hulk in the field, I could field Hawkeye all I want because they're going to want to KO their characters.
Yeah, Timmy over here is talking to us a little bit.
Yeah, it's not working.
That would be Johnny.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. I love doing the rat of that because we can just have a little bit of fun. We know we can't change any of these cards, but it's always good to imagine something.
Another option, like a quick fix, would maybe have the picture be him like with his eyes crossed or something. Like clearly he doesn't know what he's doing.
A bottle of whiskey next to him.
If you
just have him blindfolded.
Yeah. If you had Steve Rogers in the field, you could field him all you want.
So do they hate Hawkeye more than they hate the Flash? Or
nah.
No way. Hawkeye was good in the first set.
Yeah.
True.
So, all right, guys. I love hearing you guys' ideas. If you guys have any ideas for Hawkeye and how you could improve it, or just a crazy ability that would fit really well.
Are they ever going to change his costume on the cards? Because it's all the old school costumes, at least what I consider the old school.
I like the old school costume. Maybe they will. But we would love to hear from you guys. Shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. Guys, thank you so much. It's always a blast.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of the Double Burst Podcast. We would love to hear from you guys. If you guys have other suggestions on how to errata that Hawkeye card, or if you have a solid D&D draft strategy that you used, let us know. You can send us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. Of course, head on over to doubleburst.com for our past episodes, place to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, and some really cool articles that we've been posting. Big thanks to Game Haven Sandy for giving us a place to record. If you guys live in Utah, check them out. And if not, check them out at yourgamehaven.com. They have an awesome single store, so make sure you guys check that out. Thank you all for listening. I appreciate it. Everybody loves you. And until next time, may your rolls be ever in your favor.